Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.wordpress.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. What's that sound, you're probably thinking? Well, that is the sound of Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. It should be the sound of Christmas. It's actually a tambourine.
Oh, oh, oh.
Is that Santa?
Oh, oh, oh.
That sounds like Santa. It's not actually Santa. It's just my friend Paul Taylor, who is joining me for this episode. And it's nearly Christmas. So, hello, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Luke. I'm doing very well. It is very close to Christmas. 19th of December, currently.
Yeah, so we've just got like 6 days before Christmas.
I used to be more excited than this.
Me too.
6 days before Christmas. I used to be going crazy.
Yeah, me too. I used to get so excited when I was a kid about Christmas. You don't get excited anymore?
No, I don't know why. It's particularly this year, like I'm very unexcited this year. Yeah. I've been excited in previous years, but just not feeling it this year. I don't know why.
I used to, you know, every day I used to count the days, literally. I used to count down the days until it was Christmas. You know, starting in December, I'd be like, only 28 days till Christmas, for example. Well, starting
at the beginning of December.
Yeah, I couldn't count.
When do you have Christmas?
I couldn't count. I was only four. Anyway, I used to get so excited. And then when it got to Christmas Eve, I would be so unbelievably excited that I wouldn't be able to sleep. And I remember lying in bed on Christmas Eve, just trying to force myself to go to sleep so that I could then wake up and open my presents.
That's scarily similar to how I used to feel, although probably a lot of English people maybe have gone through the same experience. I think that one of the things that potentially that I'm not excited about, or the reason why I'm not excited about it, is that I don't have this year an advent calendar. I noticed that you have a Kinder advent calendar, which I was almost going to buy, but it was too late, you know, and now you've eaten 19 chocolates or shared 19 chocolates.
It's an advent calendar. What's an advent calendar, Paul?
An advent calendar. So advent is a term that I don't know where it comes from, but it's the term depicted for a calendar that usually you open every day. So there's 25, or some calendars go up to 31, but most go to 25 in the UK anyway. 25 days, and behind you open each like a door each day, and each day there's something waiting for you, whether it's a picture. So the Kinder calendar that you have, I presume, has Kinder branded chocolates behind there, whether it's like a mini egg, whether it's a bit of a Kinder Bueno, whether it's whatever else it is. I love Kinder.
You're quite familiar with the range of Kinder products. The Bueno?
The Kinder Bueno, and the Kinder Bueno is like the soft one that's really good. But that's an advent calendar. I believe advent, it's something to do with the religious aspect of Christmas.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the exact... It's something to do with the date.
But yeah, exactly. So when I was a kid, I used to have an advent calendar, which was very nice. It had like a religious scene on it, some Christian image on it. And you would find... there would be a door for each day of the month. And you would open... You'd find the door and open it. And behind it, there's like a picture of... like a wise man or something, or then there would be a picture of, you know, some Christmas related Christian thing, a picture of a shepherd, you know, a picture of a church, and then the last picture is always the baby Jesus. There he is. But this one I've got here is completely un-Christian. I think there's nothing religious about this Kinder advent calendar at all.
No, it's just full of chocolate. Now, be honest, Well, now you're probably at the age where it doesn't really matter, but when you were younger and you had advent calendars which had chocolate in them, did you secretly open like day 24 when it was actually the 16th and eat the chocolate and then kind of close it up?
Yes, I did. I would very carefully prise the door open with my nail or maybe with a nail file or some other implement. I'd prise the door open and then take the chocolate and eat it. And then I'd close the door again very carefully and make it look like it hadn't been touched. And then I would feel guilty. I'd just feel really bad. So I wouldn't enjoy the chocolate because of the guilt aspect of it. Would just ruin the experience.
Yeah, so it's kind of like when you open your presents or when you sneak into the wardrobe, like you know where your parents have hidden the presents.
Yeah.
And then you sneak in. I did that a couple of times where I would sneak in and try and open the wrapping as carefully as possible. and see what was in there, but then it ruins the whole Christmas day.
Yeah. Did you then have to pretend that it's a BMX?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, a BMX would be pretty obvious.
Yes, it would.
A BMX is a bike. For those who might not know what it is, I don't know what BMX stands for. Actually, bike, mountain, extreme,
cross, mountain cross. No, it's not mountain. It's not mountain related, is it? BMX, bicycle, man. I don't know.
X-ray. I don't know. Anyway.
Normally, I know everything because this is Luke's English podcast, right? I know all the answers, but I don't know what BMX stands for. You don't need to know. No one knows what BMX stands for. You know,
I have no idea what this. There's certain things in life that you just have no idea.
You don't need to know
what things stand for, and you don't. I don't particularly care. But it's,
no one needs to know.
It's a bike that's not a mountain bike that doesn't really have a seat. That people have turned into an extreme sport.
Yeah, you do jumps on them. You go on mini ramps and stuff on a BMX. When I was a kid, the BMX. I think the BMX was the best gift that I got at Christmas. Yeah, but you used to sometimes sneak into your parents' bedroom and find where they'd hidden the gifts and then you'd look at the stuff, would you?
Yeah, I think there was once where it was a PlayStation or a console of some sort.
Nice.
That I got. And yeah, I snuck in and opened the box and saw what it was and kind of pretended that I didn't. So and I felt bad, so I think I stopped doing it after a while. But... yeah, even now, like when if it's my girlfriend's birthday or something, like I'll have got her presents, I'll want her to open them like the night before. Like I just can't wait.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
You can't wait to give the gifts. Yeah, me too. I buy usually, to be honest, I buy my girlfriend like a few presents. You know, not just one. I have to buy her a few.
Mm-hmm.
Even though every Christmas she always says to me, "Oh, you don't need to get me anything," but I've realised that you don't need to get me anything actually means you need to get me something. Don't you find?
I think so, yeah. I find Christmas has got more and more difficult over the years to try and find good presents for anyone. Not only my girlfriend, my mum, who's coming to Paris tomorrow. I don't know what to get. She doesn't know what to get me. So we always just end up recently just giving each other money and it's kind of sad, but that's what Christmas has come to, and
it's hard to find the time to go out and buy the gifts and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Busy times.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back to the question of Christmas in a moment. We'll talk a little bit about what Christmas is like, what people normally do at Christmas in the UK and in other countries as well, a little bit. But before we do that, let's get to know Paul a little bit, shall we? Listeners, I'm talking to the listeners there. So, Paul, let's see. Okay, first of all, where are you from, Paul?
I am from the UK, originally.
Yeah.
I don't know if that satisfies your answer or need more.
I need more details.
You need more details.
Where exactly? Are you from England, Scotland, Wales, or Northern
so
Ireland?
So from the country from the UK that's called England, out of the four countries. Well, England and Northern Ireland. My mum is from Northern Ireland, from Belfast.
Oh, signed. That's
signed. That's signed. How are you? My name's Paul. I'm from Belfast. So yeah, that's my dad is from Yorkshire, which is a bit further up north of England. My mum is from Belfast. I was born in Essex.
Oh, yeah.
So officially I'm an Essex boy.
Oh, right.
Which for the listeners is kind of not a good thing. It doesn't have a good reputation. People being from Essex, they're a bit loud and rowdy and drunks. I only spent maybe like 6 months or a year there before I moved to London.
Right. Whereabouts did you live in London?
It's a good question. Beckton, I think. Uh-huh. Which I don't know if it's technically in London.
Just on the outskirts, maybe.
Yeah, I moved around a lot as a kid, so to define where I'm from is a little bit difficult because I lived in France and Switzerland and Spain as a kid.
Really?
And the UK as well. So kind of, if it's from the UK, it's from the south.
Yeah.
I spent a couple of years in Torquay. Which is in Devon, which is in the southwest.
It's on the coast, isn't it?
It is on the coast, yeah.
That is an English holiday resort.
It used to be when English holiday resorts were amazing.
This is before like EasyJet or other companies made it very easy for British tourists to fly abroad for their summer holidays. It used to be very, very expensive to fly to Spain or something. And so a lot of English people would spend their holidays in Torquay or Blackpool or Skegness or
Skegness.
Bournemouth or somewhere like that.
Brighton. Yeah. Torquay wasn't one of the, I guess it was like the, it was a nice place back in the day. And
I always think of that comedy show.
Fawlty Towers.
Fawlty Towers. It's set in Torquay.
It is, yeah.
Yes, great programme. You must have grown up watching Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, I did. I don't remember. I remember it. Like, I remember specific vivid scenes of it, but it was... It played so much on English TV, I was surprised that it only was 13 episodes.
Yeah.
The whole thing lasted 13 episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were half an hour or an hour, but it felt like there were many more series because they just kept on playing it on repeat and that kind of stuff.
Just two series. If you don't know what that is, ladies and gentlemen, then...
look it up.
You can check it out. You can just Google it. But it's difficult to spell, isn't it? Fawlty Towers. I'll put a link on the page and I have to make a note of that. It's a classic British sitcom. I'll tell you about it one day. Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, since you're doing a whole thing on British comedy.
Yeah.
Then that should be an episode, I think.
Yeah, I think I should devote one to Fawlty Towers. We can listen to Basil Fawlty talking to Manuel or something.
Manuel.
Which is... I'll talk about it properly in due course. Right, so you've moved around a lot, but basically from the south of England, London. But you said that you spent time in Spain, Switzerland and France as a kid.
Yeah. Yes. So I from the age of 2 to 4, I lived in Geneva.
Oh yeah.
I spent then from like 4 till 9 in France, in near Geneva. Actually lived in Evian, where they make the water.
Oh really?
For a little bit.
So is the tap water just Evian there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was 5. I have no idea, but yeah, presumably you just bath and have showers in Evian water.
Wow.
That's how amazing it is.
It must be luxury.
You can just drink. You can have in a shower and just drink.
Yeah. I imagine the people who live in Evian are just all beautiful and full of energy and vitality.
Yeah, is they're French, right? Though, so that's the unfortunate... I'm joking, it's not...
Not the same level of vitality. if it depends on how you define vitality. If it means sitting outside a cafe, not really doing anything, then that's very vital,
which is,
isn't it?
Yeah, it could be very vital. So, yeah, and then when I was 9, I moved back to England... my parents split up, so I moved back to England with my mum. At the time, I don't remember this, but at the time I couldn't read or write English properly.
Yeah.
Because I'd been living in France for a while.
Right. I suppose you were learning French then at the time, right?
Yeah, I was at an international school for most of those years, so I was doing my studies in English mainly.
Yeah.
And I vividly remember being not very good at French. Like, I was one of the worst French students at that age.
So, hold on, how old were you at this time?
So, from the age of 2 till 9, I was in French speak. I was spent a couple of years in Geneva and the rest in France.
By the way, sorry, in Geneva, in Switzerland, do they speak French there?
They do, yeah. So, that's French-speaking Switzerland. Yeah. And the international school that I was at was in Geneva. Okay. So, my level of French, I remember not getting very good grades compared to the rest of the kids who, you know, spoke it and were able to write it fluently. So I guess I was kind of mixed between the two. But then I moved over to moved back to England when I was about nine.
Yeah. And so at that point, when you moved back to England, your English was not at the same level as the other kids because you'd been operating in French a bit.
Yeah, I think neither of the languages was as it should have been when I was nine. Like, my English wasn't as good as it should have been if I was in England up until nine, and same with the French. Mm. I could speak it fluently because both my parents spoke it with me as well.
Yeah.
I think I had an American accent back then.
Really?
Yeah, and it
was... How was that?
I guess in the international school, and a lot of American kids go there.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was about nine, speaking to my dad on the phone, who has the same accent as me now. And I was making fun of him to my mum. Yeah. They'd split up, so like I'd make fun of him to my mum when I spoke to him on the phone. But now we have the same accent. But I remember making fun of his accent.
Yeah.
Because I guess I had an American accent back then. It wasn't the same one as me, which is very... I've had a few different accents.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting that it's normal, I suppose, you know, when you spend time with people who speak in a certain way, you tend to copy the way they speak. It's just, it's actually, there's a name for it, accommodation.
Is it?
What they call it, yeah. That's why, for example, you know, communities tend to develop specific accents and dialects because they define themselves by belonging to that community. Mm. And so they start to speak in a similar way. They bind themselves together in the way that they speak or the way that they identify each other as being members of the same community, which could explain why, for example, in Liverpool and in Manchester, you've got two really different accents and two different identities. So either
and they're not far away from each other.
Yeah, it's half an hour away on the by car, half an hour. So I suppose if you consider yourself to be a Scouser, then you know your accent is part of your culture, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I think almost by force, I guess, as a kid, like, had to accommodate accents, if that's the term for it, where when I moved back to England when I was nine, I was classed as the French kid.
Yeah.
Because I guess I had a weird accent when I spoke English.
How did you speak then?
I don't know. I think I had this American accent for a bit. But so when I was nine, I was in Torquay in the southwest of England. And then after 2 years, I moved to the southeast of England in Canterbury.
Nice place.
Well known for its archbishop and its cathedral.
Yeah.
Home of
the Church of England, isn't it?
I don't know.
Well, the Archbishop of... Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, he's like the head of something.
Head of the Anglican Church. And Canterbury is a lovely place with a beautiful cathedral.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of French people go there, kids, like on school exchanges and stuff. But I remember when I moved to Canterbury, people made fun of me because I had a southwest English accent. So obviously in those 2 years, my accent had changed.
Yeah.
And then so I kind of ended up assimilating to the southeast accent. And then, I don't know, it's just weird. I have this weird relationship with accents.
Does this mean, Paul, that you have an ear for different accents?
Yeah, I think so. I'm able to imitate a few different English-speaking accents.
Yeah.
A few different French ones as well. At some stage when I spoke French, a few years back, when I first met my girlfriend, I had a Canadian French accent.
Really?
Because I had spent a year living in Montreal.
So what's the difference between a standard French accent and a Canadian French accent?
This is good.
Good question. While you're thinking about that, between like British English and Canadian English, there's obviously a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I often try to distinguish between, for example, Canadian English and American English.
Yeah, it's difficult.
They sound pretty similar, don't they? But there are some things that make them different.
Yeah, with Canadian English, the thing that will give it away is anything, like any word that will have an OU in it. So, like, to go out, about. Mm-hmm.
It's the OW sound.
It's, isn't it? Yeah, so instead of saying, you know, about, they'll usually say like a boat, opposed to the Americans, which will say about, like they'll really pronounce it.
Ow.
Yeah. So the phrase, it's so if you were to say in British English,
out and about. Are you out and about tonight?
Yeah. Are you out and about? In American, it would probably, are you out and about?
Out and about. Because the T sort of hey, if you're out and about later on, maybe, you know, come over, we'll have a drink.
If you're out and about, out Canadian about. Would be like, if you're out and about.
Yeah.
It's very slight change. Like, that's the only way that I can make the difference. So, apart from that, their accents are very similar.
So in British English, it would be like out and about, whereas in Canada, it's like, how do you do it again?
Oh, out and about. It's I don't know if I'm doing it properly, but yeah. Like the phrase I would always be like, oh, it's all about the hockey, eh?
Yeah.
Because they say A a lot as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a stereotype, but it's they do at the end of some of their sentences.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right. I spent some time in Canada on a holiday once when I was about 18. I went there with my cousin. We travelled across Canada on Greyhound buses. Some very long journeys.
Yeah, Canada's huge.
It's massive. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's crazy. Huge. It's out of control.
I didn't realise, but the east coast of Canada is closer to Europe than it is to the west coast of Canada.
That I didn't know. That's a crazy fact.
It's further to go from one end of Canada to the other than it is to go across the Atlantic Ocean.
I didn't appreciate Europe until when I went there to live. People would say to me, you know, wow, you must have been to a ton of European countries. And I was like, well, I've been to a few by that stage, you know, Germany, France, that kind of stuff. And like, how have you not been to more countries? It's such a small place. Like, you can drive an hour in this direction, be in a different country, speak a different language. You can turn around, go an hour in the opposite direction, be in a different country, different language.
Yeah.
Like, we fly for 6 hours and we're still in the same country.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when it hit me of the size of Canada. Australia as well is huge. I spent some time there as well, and it's the same reaction. And for them, it's even worse because they're further away. You know, they're far away from anywhere, kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Wow. So you've spent time in lots of places. We've just established that you've lived, you know, first part of your life in the UK, and then you lived in Switzerland and France, and then you went back to England.
Yeah.
And then you went to Spain.
Then I went to Spain between 14 and 16. So my dad was living out in Spain, and I ended up going to live with him in Spain in Madrid for 2 years.
Right.
For between the ages of 14 and 16,
wow.
Before I eventually came back to the UK
at
16, 17.
Okay. And then you lived in America? You lived in Canada?
I lived in Canada and Australia during my... So I studied French and Spanish at university.
Yeah.
And when you're studying that in the UK, you need to leave the UK for a year and go to a French or Spanish-speaking country.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, my Spanish was better than my French, so I wanted to go to a French-speaking country to improve my French. And because I'd lived in France already, I thought it would be cool to go to Canada. So that's how I ended up in Canada. And I spent 8 months there and 4 months in Australia before I came back to finish my degree in the UK. And then... Once I finished my degree in the UK, I moved to France, and I've been here since.
So how long have you been here now?
Just over 4 years.
Okay. So a question that I can imagine some of my listeners might want to know the answer to, although it might not be a very nice question to answer, is which country is the best? Obviously, it's in England, but which country is the best?
Iraq.
Yeah?
I've never been. No, I don't know. My favourite one, I mean, they all have good and bad points. My favourite one that I was in...
Let's go through some of those good and bad points, Paul.
All right.
That's interesting. Go on.
Okay, so should we start with England?
Yeah.
I guess some good points are the tea. The tea's good.
Yeah.
The best tea in the world is in England.
We collect it from other countries.
We did, but here's another fun fact. I didn't know there were different types of tea... Until I left England, because until I was in England, I was used to saying, you know, my mum would be like, oh, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want a cup of tea is the typical phrase in England, which means black tea, which the rest of the world calls English breakfast.
Yeah.
With milk. But we just call that a cup of tea.
Yeah.
So when I was in Canada, I asked for a cup of tea at the equivalent of the Starbucks over there. It's called Second Cup, which is kind of a cool name.
Second
and I
asked, cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I asked for a cup of tea, and the woman said, what type of tea?
And you were like, just the normal, please?
Just a cup of tea. And so She explained to me the different types of tea they had, like chamomile, like mint tea, all these crazy other different types of tea that I'd never really heard of until I left the UK.
You're like, don't you just have tea?
Yeah.
Just give me a cup of tea? And she's like, well, would you like that Earl Grey, Lady Grey, Darjeeling, Assam? Just stop confusing me. Just give me tea in a cup.
Well, here's the thing as well. Everyone that I've spoken to who's not from the UK has the stereotype that we drink tea, which is true. But they also have the stereotype that we drink tea with milk. But every tea with milk. They think we drink every different type of tea with milk.
Yeah.
There's only one type of tea that I drink with milk, and that's English breakfast.
Yeah.
Earl Grey, I would never put milk in it.
Yeah.
Darjeeling, now that I've tested all these teas, you wouldn't put milk in any of them.
No.
But for some reason, like, I don't know, it's a big joke. It's like, oh, you know, why don't you have some milk with that? It's like, well...
It's like, why don't you stop getting my country wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
The other stereotype that people always have about English and tea is that we drink it in a cup and saucer and that it's all very posh and very highfalutin. Afternoon tea, all that kind of thing.
But we don't. What are you talking about? Do you not do that here?
We do drink tea in the afternoon, but we also drink it in the morning, in the late morning, in the late early afternoon, in the early late post-evening, in the... Anytime
throughout the whole day,
anytime. It's not just
anytime is good for tea.
Yeah, it's not one particular sort of like moment where we all stop and we all, you know, get together in the drawing room and you know, bring out the best tea set, and then we all sit round and discuss butter
and the Queen.
Yeah, exactly. We don't all sort of. I find that a little bit annoying because that's not the way it is. Instead, you drink very strong builder's tea out of a coffee mug,
yeah,
and you have a biscuit with it, and you dunk the biscuit into the tea.
The dunkage of the biscuit. It's difficult living in France because there's not very many dunking type biscuits.
No, but you can get, you know, chocolate digestives in Carrefour.
You can do, yeah. Chocolate digestives are good because the chocolate kind of melts when you dip it in, but it doesn't break, which is good.
It's a good, robust biscuit, isn't it, the digestive?
It is, yeah. The ones that I currently have are French. They're called petit déjeuner.
Breakfasts.
Yeah, they're little breakfast, like, they're made by Belvita, which is, I guess, some sort of biscuit company, that are supposed to be good for you. For breakfast, but yeah, they have some pretty good dunkage action, except they kind of, the boxes end up getting bashed about, so they end up in little bits and pieces.
They get broken.
So,
you can't dunk a broken biscuit.
No, but sometimes you don't know it's broken. It's like a hairline fracture.
Yes.
And you don't quite see that it's actually cracked the whole way through. So you dunk it in and it just breaks off like half of the biscuit into the bottom of the tea. Takes about 15 seconds for it to float back up. And you have to get your spoon to then spoon out the wet, soggy biscuit. Or the worst case, if it doesn't float up to the top, like when you're finishing your tea, you get bits of biscuit. It's disgusting. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just not cricket.
You've got to be very, very careful when dunking the biscuit to make sure it doesn't break it. Always check the biscuit first before you start dunking, because otherwise you're going
to
get.
They need to have warning labels on biscuits saying this. They need to have like dunkage time. You know, like on. I've noticed tea bags in Europe.
Yeah.
Like in France, when I buy tea, it tells you the infusion time.
Yeah.
It says this tea bag should be infused for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas we kind of play it by ear.
We're like, don't tell me how to infuse my tea.
Exactly. They should have that for biscuits though, like dunk time.
Yeah.
This biscuit has a 10 second dunk time so that you know when you should be dunking it, and this one has like a 1 second dunk, so it's like a quick dunk. You get some like big, like have you ever dunked?
It's a regular verb.
All right, English teacher. Shortbread.
I have dunked shortbread.
That's a beast. That can like dunk for like 30 seconds at least.
It's got very,
before it gets soft.
Very good dunking ratio.
I saw something in France that disgusted me though. Everyone's probably going,
what, the street?
No, it's about dunking.
Uh-huh.
So breakfast in France, cup of coffee, like a slightly large, like a large rim glass, enough for dunkage.
Yeah, a large glass that leaves enough space for you to dunk a snack of some kind.
So,
it should be a biscuit, but what do they dunk here in Paris?
I have seen one of my co-workers dunk. So first of all, take a baguette, which is obviously very French, like a bit of baguette.
Yeah.
Put some butter on it.
Yeah.
And dunk that in the coffee.
Dunk buttered baguette into a coffee? That's mental.
And then drink the coffee afterwards with the butter, like buttered coffee. It was disgusting. I mean, I haven't tried it. I'm not a huge fan of coffee, so I can't imagine doing that with tea, though. Mm. So,
see, the thing is, Paul, that my immediate reaction to that is you can't mix butter and a hot drink. Like, you can't mix butter and tea or butter and coffee. But what do you think we put in all those biscuits? Full of butter, aren't
full
we?
Of butter, yeah.
So we are dunking butter, in effect.
This is true.
But it's not just butter. You know, it's butter in a biscuit. It's
in a biscuit.
Different. It's, the rules are different.
Yeah. So all that to say that the advantage of living in England is tea.
Okay.
That's where that conversation
is.
That
from. The only advantage of living in England?
No, there's other advantages as well. I guess there's London's great. It's very multinational. There's every type of restaurant, every type of person that you can ever find. The nightlife is pretty good. There's a lot of theatre, a lot of great concerts, a lot of great comedy, all sorts of things you can do in many different cities in England.
Yeah.
Disadvantaged weather is, I mean, I got used to it. The weather today is in Paris is kind of like London, where one minute it's sunny, next minute it's cloudy and rainy, and then it's sunny again.
Mm. But it's never that. It's never that bad. It's not brutal, is it? You know, it's just a bit depressing at times.
Yeah.
It's just you get a bit wet, you get a bit cold. It can be dark and a bit dark during the winter.
Well, I think that's because the ceiling, like the clouds are much lower in London than they are here. Like the weather's pretty similar from Paris to London, a few degrees warmer, but the ceiling, like the cloud is are much higher, so you don't feel as claustrophobic or as...
So you're saying that the clouds seem to be lower in London, which gives the impression that you're under the weather a little bit more than in...
Literally Paris. Under the weather, yeah.
Yeah, literally. Okay. Mm. All right. Okay, that's England. Best thing is the tea, the worst thing is the weather. What about other places? Tell me about Australia, then.
Australia, the thing that I enjoyed... I was in Sydney for 4 months.
Yeah.
The thing that I enjoyed about there is it had a big city feel.
Yeah.
Like London or Paris, but the beach was 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
And I was there during winter, but it was still warm enough to go to the beach, for an English person anyway, and hang out. The first time I ever went surfing was in Australia in the winter, but that was kind of, for me, the biggest thing. The people there are great as well.
Yeah.
They're pretty open to foreigners, even English people.
Really?
I think the reason I liked it so much was the people. Like, it was... I think people make the place sometimes. You know, if you can live in the most beautiful place, but the people are horrible, and then it doesn't make for a great experience.
It's all about the company, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so the Australians. All right. So did you... I mean, you pick up accents wherever you go. Did you end up... Did you find that you were picking up the Australian accent?
Weirdly, yeah. So the biggest part that I picked up was, instead of... So in English... I would probably normally say butter.
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 Instead
you can't
of,
put butter in coffee.
You
like,
can't put butter in
coffee. Pasta butter.
Pasta butter, close the shutter, give me a bottle of water. Yeah. You just miss out all the T's. They're all glottal stops.
Yeah. So wait, butter. Obviously that's butter, isn't
butter,
it?
Butter, yeah.
Or in America.
Butter.
Yeah.
With as if it was a double D.
Butter.
Here's the thing, when Americans say to me and they get annoyed, they're like, why don't you pronounce your T's? I say, well, I'd rather not pronounce them than pronounce them as D's, as incorrectly.
Yeah.
So that's my answer to you, America.
Yeah. And they're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was the thing that I started doing in Australia, because I think people had a difficult time listening, or they probably didn't, but it felt... So I ended up taking the double D, because they say like butter. They would say, instead of saying butter or butter, they would say like butter.
So they do the D. They do it like the Americans.
They do they do it like the Americans. So like,
can I get a
bottle of water?
Oh yeah, it's everything seems to kind of go up at the.
Kind of goes up at the ends. You know what I mean?
Is that one of the keys to doing an Australian accent, mate?
Yeah, it is. Also, saying kind of like weird phrases like "G'day, mate. How you going?"
Yeah.
Which I found weird, because that was the immigration guy when I landed. I was like,
really?
I'm not going anywhere. I just got here. Like, what do you mean, how am I going? By bus? By So they have, they shorten everything down, like the Arvo. Where are you going in the Arvo, mate?
Okay.
Arvo is afternoon.
Yeah.
But they shorten it down to Arvo.
Let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to g'day, mate.
Hmm.
So what's g'day, mate? Then what's that? What does that mean?
It means good day, friend. Okay. A good day, mate. Good g'day. But they spell it, if you were to spell it, it would probably G apostrophe, then D-A-Y. Yeah.
So, g'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
That's your standard, that's one of the standard sort of part bits of Australian English that we all know, isn't it?
Yeah.
G'day, like, mate.
In and UK English would be, all right, mate.
Yeah. All right, mate. And then, g'day, mate. And in America?
How are you? I don't know.
So they would say, hey.
Hey, how are you? Hey, yeah, I'm trying to think what they would potentially say, but yeah.
Something like, hey. I find that Americans often say, hey.
Yeah, just hey.
Hey.
Hey there.
I always thought hey was kind of funny because...
how you doing?
Say hi. Hi, meaning hello. And in America, it's like, hey. And in England, we say, hey, when someone is stealing your bike. Hey!
Yeah, it's true.
Hey, come back.
Oi! Oi! Yeah. It's very British, isn't
it? Oi, you! Oi! Watch Oi. It. I'm watching you.
Oi.
Oi! Yeah.
Yeah, so g'day.
G'day, mate.
G'day, mate. How you going?
How you going? How are you going? Which is a bit like, how are you doing, right?
Yeah, it's exactly like that. What I realised is that they're probably more... They take after... Most other countries say, how are you going? In French, comment tu vas?
Mm-hmm.
Literally translates to, how are you going?
Yeah.
In Spanish, como vas?
Uh-huh.
How are you going?
Uh-huh. Japanese?
Japanese. Konnichiwa.
I don't know how they say it.
You spent some time in Japan.
Genki. Genki desu ka?
And what is it? What
Genki is,
that?
Is like, you all right?
Okay.
So Genki means all right. Genki desu ka? I haven't spoken Japanese for a long time. Genki desu. Which is like, Genki is a nice word. It sort of means full of energy, spirited, sort of energetic. Yeah. Genki, that's it.
That's pretty cool.
To say Genki, which means all right.
I will walk around Japan now when I'm next day and just... You've probably told me to tell them to fuck off. And so when I walk around Japan, they'll be like, sorry.
Now you're gonna
I've
go,
heard they're very they're
like,
nice.
Genki, and they'll be like, what? They're lovely people. And if they don't understand you, it's all right. They'll just sort of laugh and then run away. They're shy.
Yeah, I get that. In that, I don't know if that's a stereotype. I don't really have many stereotypes of Japan, really.
I guess the stereotypes are that they tend to go... They tend, as tourists, they hang around in large groups.
Mm-hmm. Cameras around the neck.
Cameras, and they
yeah,
take
that's
photos
a stereotype.
Of everything.
And eat sushi.
They eat sushi and they do that peace sign... Whenever you, with their fingers.
Yeah,
whenever
I thought that was more China, like
no,
Chinese
definitely
people.
Definitely Japanese.
Yeah,
people.
Where they do the V, yeah. Like the V for victory
peace.
Sign.
Peace, and they do the peace sign, and they move their head to one side, mm-hmm. and do a smile. So if you basically with a Japanese person, if you put a camera in their face,
they'll
then
do that.
The hand automatically comes up with the peace sign, and it's almost like involuntary. They can't not do it.
It's like when you have a scratch or an itch on your face.
Yeah.
You go and scratch it. You don't even know that you're doing it.
Yeah,
Japanese people do that.
Exactly. I think that it's. I can't explain it, but I think it's like something they can't not do. I'm sort of being ironic here.
Okay.
Obviously, they choose to do it, but I feel like if we could harness the energy that is used for Japanese people to you do the peace sign.
Yeah.
When a photograph is taken of them, we could use that energy.
Well, like hook up a motor or something,
yeah,
and then
exactly, yeah.
end up turning
yeah.
it into
they could power
kinetic
their mobile,
energy.
They could power the mobile phones off it. They should recharge some Japanese.
They must have some. Do you know Nike fuel bands? Those like those
yeah.
wrist things that calculate like Nike fuel and it tells you how many calories you're burning. They must love that stuff. Like putting up the because
oh, yeah.
it's based on wrist motion.
Yeah, they could have like a kinetic energy. Like
charging device. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, and what they would that would be connected to the mobile phone, which has a camera in it. So every time someone takes a photo of them, they would do the peace sign, and that would then charge the battery in the camera. So they would then just be able to continue taking photos of each other forever.
Yeah,
I don't know, if
you're fully out of battery, you might need to do some dirty things in order to get it fully charged, though. Like that's my initial reaction. You'd kind
yeah.
of have
yeah,
to.
Maybe.
Anyway,
yeah. All right. So anyway, we got off topic a little bit there. So that's Australia. The good thing? What were you saying? It's a nice place. The people are friendly and so on. What bad things in Australia? Snakes.
All the creepy crawlies. Like you have to. I was there in the winter, so it wasn't too much of an issue. Mm-hmm. And in the city, it's not too much of an issue either. But if you're out. Slightly out in the city, you kind of have to check your shoes before you put them on in case there's any spiders or things in there, like really? Your washing machine, your toilet. Like my uncle who lives out there was telling me that you have to kind of, before you go to the toilet, you have to check really? That there's no kind of spider or something under there in case it jumps up and bites you in the bum.
Oh my God. Or somewhere else,
yeah. You'd have...
that would be terrible. Not only would you be poisoned, you'd also be poisoned in a very sensitive place.
You might not be able to reproduce ever again.
It would hurt a lot more than it would normally hurt.
Yeah. So that's a disadvantage. And it's quite far away from everywhere. You know, to get there from Europe, it's like 24-hour flight. Yeah. So it's kind of far. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Australia, the United States of America.
America. Advantages. What I like about it is that it's you've got everything in the US in terms of landscape. You know, here we'd have to go to different countries to get to the mountains, to go to lakes, to go to a desert kind of thing. Over there, they've kind of got all of that, which is great. So you can stay in the same country.
You can go to like LA, you can see the city, you can go out to Nevada and see the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
you've got Las Vegas there. You've got the mountains for skiing. They've got all kinds of different landscapes there. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you almost don't need to leave, which is potentially why a lot of Americans don't have passports, because it's such a diverse country in terms of landscape, but as well everything else.
That I suppose explains to an extent this kind of isolationist thing about the US, that some people in America kind of consider America to be the world itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe because it's the new world, but also because the borders, you know, I've obviously got Canada in the north and Mexico in the south, but on either side, you've just got very wide open oceans, you know. So that contributes to that feeling of isolation, I suppose, when you're there. Plus, you've got such wide variety of different types of land in the country. Kind of contributes to that sense that America is a nation on its own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
What about bad things in the States, though?
Bad things in the States. Food, I think.
Really?
Yeah, and I know the stereotype is that English people or England has bad food. I think the problem in England is that we don't know how to cook. We have available food, like the most available. We even have more food, different types of food available in England than we do in France. Like I go to a French supermarket and it's very much the same stuff everywhere. It's good stuff, but there's not, like, if you want to make a curry or you want to make some Chinese food or Japanese food, or you want to make something a bit more exotic than just French food, it's very difficult to find in a French supermarket. You have to go to like a specialized thing. Whereas in the UK, you have the variety in a normal supermarket. And the thing with the US is that they're, the food standards in terms of, like, you go to a supermarket, just everything is very, it's got added stuff in it that they don't need. You know, they've just got, like, they've got cheese in cans, like spray cans of cheese, of like fake cheese. They've just got a crazy amount, and they've got a supermarket. In fact, you've got a bag, Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And this is like an organic kind of supermarket only.
Yeah.
But the stuff you get in there just feels like a French supermarket. Any French supermarket is the same as that.
Yeah. So their sort of high level boutique supermarket is just a standard European supermarket.
Yeah. It just seems like it's more difficult to come across natural, basic ingredients that haven't been somehow genetically modified.
Yes.
Or
they're covered in sugar. Or they're covered in, like, pink, sweetener stuff or something.
Yeah. So I guess that's a disadvantage. I mean, there's great places to eat. Like, I've eaten in great places, but you usually have to pay quite a bit of money for a pretty decent restaurant, I found.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, if you want to grab a quick bite to eat, fast food. Here's the thing, and I don't know whether it's a good thing or not. Like, in the UK, our fast food culture, I like, because there's healthy fast food. There's great sandwich shops. There's great salad places. There's great all sorts of kind of healthy food because London's turned into a place where you need to work. So you want to take your healthy food, take it to your desk and work with. And that's kind of spread across the UK.
Yeah.
And there's pretty good chains that are, you know, even like something like Wagamama, which is a like a Japanese restaurant. It's pretty decent and it's become a chain.
Yeah.
In the US, the chains I find are less healthy. They don't necessarily have the health chain thing. You can get healthy food, but it's more kind of like boutique-y type hipster type places.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Okay. Now, what about Switzerland? I mean, you were there when you were very young, so I wonder.
Yeah, there's not a lot that I went back recently a few years ago for a week for work, and it was Geneva specifically would just like watch shops.
Just loads of watch
shops. Loads of watches, loads of chocolate places, loads of places that sold Swiss Army knives. Just
chocolates, watches and folding knives.
And banks.
And banks.
Yeah, and that's not an exaggeration. Like every street you walk down, it's like the pharmacies in France.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pharmacies in France. There's a lot of watch places in Switzerland.
It's interesting. You would have thought that they would all have a watch now. Like how many watches do they
how
need?
How many watches do you need?
It's like, I'm not sure that I know exactly what time it is.
I need to buy a new
nine
watch.
Watches.
Well, they become like an accessory, don't they? Especially like if they're proper rich people that have like good metal watches and things like that. So, Switzerland, in general, though, I guess the perception is the good thing is it's a very wealthy country. A lot of people go there because you earn a lot of money if you work there.
Yeah.
I guess the disadvantage potentially is that there's four languages that are spoken. Four or three?
It's
French, Italian,
French,
German.
French, Italian, German, and Romance.
Romance, yeah. So there's four different languages in the same country, which can probably be a disadvantage depending on where you're at. Like if you're from Geneva and you speak French from Switzerland and you go to Basel, which is
German,
you might have a difficult... It must be difficult, actually. I've not thought about that, like not being able to communicate to somebody else in your own country.
Yeah.
So they're almost... Yeah, because I guess we don't necessarily have that problem here, or France doesn't.
Well,
haven't
you been to Scotland?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times.
I mean, that's a joke, because, you know, sometimes it's difficult to understand.
What are you talking about, Paul?
If you go to the pub...
You bastard, what are you talking about? Fucking Scottish bastard.
Hello everybody, sorry for the interruption, but I just wanted to tell you that's the end of part one of this conversation, and the rest of it continues in part two. That's a surprise, isn't it? Not really, no. Anyway, I strongly recommend that you listen to part two because we talk about all kinds of really interesting things and it gets very funny near the end. So that's it for this one. See you later. Bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.